Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Governor Peter Shumlin says the state will drop its health care exchange and move to a federal model if either of two upcoming deadlines are not met. The first comes at the end of May. The second is in October. Shumlin thinks the current problems will be solved, but he wants to have a contingency plan in place just in case he's wrong.
Listen, there's enough skepticism about Vermont Health Connect and frustration so that Vermonters should know what our plans are should we fail. Now, what I'm telling you as governor is we expect it to work. We think it will work. But we also think it's fair that people understand what we would do if it didn't.
Why do important problems still remain at Vermont Health Connect? And how would moving to a federal model affect individuals who get their coverage on the state exchange? These are some of the questions we have today for our guest, the chief of healthcare reform for the Shumlin administration, Lawrence Miller. Lawrence, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Good to be with you.
And you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Do you think Vermont should drop its state-run healthcare exchange and move to a federal model? Why? What would be some of the advantages of doing that? Should the legislature consider increasing the size of the state subsidies that are available for individuals on Vermont Health Connect? If you think so, how would it be paid for? 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net, but give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. So before we look at the specifics of the problems that still remain at Vermont Health Connect, let's step back a little bit and look at a bigger picture. Some states, and most notably, I think, Kentucky, have had a pretty smooth experience implementing their own state exchange. Some states like Oregon and Vermont have had a pretty difficult time. So what did Kentucky do right to make their exchange work? And what did Vermont do wrong?
So from talking to folks who have more familiarity with the Kentucky project than I do directly, one of the things they reportedly did was really control the scope of the project very effectively. That is, they really focused on just what the core needs would be for the first launch. They also managed to start earlier. We had a negotiation with a vendor that went on for a while and then failed. And so ultimately, when the state hired CGI and picked up the Hawaii contract, there was very little time remaining before launch compared to the amount of time that Kentucky was about to use. So those are the two big factors, is that they started earlier and they tried to do a lot less for that initial launch.
Did they also choose a different vendor?
They did. And I think that there was nobody who had experience doing state exchanges, though. This was a new thing. California had tried to do something previously, but there were not a lot of standards. What CMS put out continued to evolve throughout the design process. The configurations that they were going to require on their end for connecting to the federal hub continued to change. So there was really a lot of evolution. And I don't think that anybody would characterize it as particularly smooth either in any of those cases, including Kentucky. It had its share of challenges. The experience for their citizens was much, much better. What we learned from that or applying to other projects around the state is that use of additional time in the project, not aiming for a date certain, but giving a new project adequate time before launch, and really working through requirements and business processes well ahead of time before coding begins.
You know, some of our listeners are wondering, we've gotten a couple of emails on this. They wonder, how could Vermont spend more than $200 million on an exchange and still not have the exchange work? Now, you're a very successful business person. Does the appropriation of $200 million for a flawed exchange just boggle your mind?
Well, we do expect to complete the work within the funding that CMS made available. And I presume that because Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services has done this around the country and does financial support for very large projects all the time, that this is consistent with their expectations. I think people have to remember that it's not just a website. This was the first core project of the replacement of the Agency of Human Services major enterprise system. So there's a lot that's associated with this project that is not specific to the qualified health plan exchange component of the website. It's the foundation, the Oracle stack, the underlying architecture for that enterprise project. It's the Magi Medicaid rules engine and enrollment re-verification. You know, there you're talking about fraud, waste, and abuse controls on a $1.3 billion program. In that context, you know, the federal requirements are fairly high.
And we had this email from George who wants to know, he thinks that the exchange has been a total failure and that if the governor is akin to a CEO of a corporation, do you think that CEO would keep his job with the extent of this incompetence? And he also wants to know, is the federal government talking about asking for any of this money back?
No. The federal government has been a very good partner to work with. I think total failure overstates it. There are certainly a great many frustrations for people with the operating piece of Vermont Health Connect. But the underlying architecture, the underlying technology so far as it's completed, is sound. The problem is that there are several automation processes that are not yet complete. And that's the critical piece that needs to be finished by May. What I told people when we had to make the decision to transition away from the original vendor to a new vendor, that would interrupt the development cycle. We had to complete a knowledge transfer. We had to complete the open enrollment process for this year and then restart the development efforts to complete the automated change of circumstance. Now that's now on track. We'll see that through at the end of May. We'll need a renewals functionality completed by October, need to have that contract completed as well by the end of May for the development to occur in a timely fashion. This work with our new vendor has been very consistently on time. It's been very consistently within budget. So I have a much higher sense of confidence about this project than I have since I first became associated with it.
We got this email from John, who really has a couple of questions. He wonders why the state didn't require any guarantees of success for an operating website from the original vendor. That would be CGI. I think there was a $5 million penalty, and that was it. And was you chose Optum to do the new work, and John's impression is that would be a contract that was given out without bid.
So the original contract that was developed did have liquidated damages in it. It did have some milestones and criteria in it. Ultimately, we did make the decision to terminate that contract, and CGI at that point was also wanting to get out of the arrangement. So we did come to a settlement on that moved all of the work successfully to the new vendor. What we did was went out with CMS's technical assistance group's support, because it is 100% federal funding, so CMS's participation is very important. We went and evaluated with the help of a vendor those firms that were doing exchange remediation work around the country and who was most successful, and got bids from four vendors in a modified bid process. One of those vendors was disqualified on conflict requirements by CMS. One of them clearly didn't have the capacity at that time to add another state to their portfolio. And of the last two vendors, Optum was substantially less expensive on their rate card and had very very good references, including from CMS themselves, where they'd done a lot of remediation work. So that was the process by which we made that vendor selection.
Can you understand why a lot of folks are just scratching their heads and have a lot of frustration that $200 million could be spent on this project and this thing still doesn't work?
Yeah, it's one of those things where when you are sitting there with something almost finished, but the last pieces are so important to the overall function, it really doesn't feel like it's got a meaningful amount of value.
And one of those functions is the so-called change of circumstance. We have folks who need to change their address, maybe their income has changes to their family situation. And these folks can't go online and do this electronically. It's being done manually. And so the idea, the deadline, the first deadline is by the end of May, this is going to work.
The first deadline is that by the end of May, the automated change of circumstance function will be installed and we'll be able to begin using it for the back office functions. We're not going to turn it on for the public to use until we've had an opportunity to run it in the background and make absolutely certain that everything's solid. But that'll take what's a manual process, I should describe. It's making changes in the databases of one, some, or all of the systems, and that's in the Vermont Health Connect system itself. It's in the system at Benaissance, the premium processor, and then at one or several of the carriers. So the interim change process takes something like an hour and a half. It's detailed work with very many steps and a high chance because of that many steps for error. This automation function would allow the customer service representative to be able to make the changes really quickly in a couple of minutes with somebody on the phone and have those automatically propagate to the other systems. So when that's delivered, it won't automatically solve all of the problems. It will mean that new changes coming through will happen very quickly, but we've still going to have a lot of cleanup to do, make sure that everything's reconciled and tied out and all the data integrity issues that have come from having a manual process are resolved.
So it's going to happen, if I understand this correctly, is right now I have a change of circumstance. I call, you and I walk through this manually. It takes about an hour and a half.
Well, we'll talk to the caller and develop a service request, and then the work will be done in the background afterwards. Right now, the average call hold time last week was under half a minute, and the average amount of time that somebody had to spend on the phone was about 8 minutes. So people can call and not expect that it's going to take a tremendous amount of time to do their part of their business with Vermont Health Connect, but it takes a considerable amount of time thereafter for those changes to be reflected in the system and on their bill. Our goal is to have basic industry operating standards by October 1st, where if you request a change in the first half of the month, it's reflected on your bill the following month. And if you make a change later than that, it would be reflected on the bill after that.
Let's go to our callers and start off with Ralph in Enosburg. Hi, Ralph. Welcome to the program.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. And, I was so pleased to read the 7 Days article about Mr. Miller, that he was a successful businessman and all that, just rather than just another government bureaucrat. That made me feel really good. And my basic question is, though, the Republicans have been bellyaching about it all the time and say we should be like New Hampshire and just get on the federal exchange. Won't the federal exchange, being on that, if we dissolve this, make it just more expensive? Won't Vermonters lose their subsidies from the state on their health insurance if we drop this exchange and go to the federal exchange? That's my question. I'll take my answer off air.
Thank you, Ralph. Yeah, there's a couple of major hurdles that would be associated with going to the federal exchange. The first and most dramatic hurdle is that the Supreme Court currently has a case before it, King versus Burwell, that questions whether or not, given the language of the law, that federal subsidies are available to citizens of states that use the federal exchange. And until that's resolved, it would certainly be premature to make a shift to the federal marketplace. The other thing that's very important to realize is that we have combined our qualified health plan exchange with our MAGI Medicaid rules eligibility and enrollment system. So when somebody comes on to Vermont Health Connect, they're evaluated for, if they ask for subsidy, they're evaluated for whether or not they should be tracked into Medicaid or into a subsidized plan. And Vermont also offers additional Vermont premium assistance. So if we move the qualified health plans over to the federal exchange, they're not going to be able to calculate Vermont premium assistance. That's not a anything that they do. It's not a system functionality that they would develop. The only other state in the country that offers something similar is Massachusetts. So Vermonters would lose that level of support, around $17.5 million, unless we built another program to deliver that benefit. The other thing is we'd still have to continue to do Medicaid eligibility and enrollment. So we would still need to complete Vermont Health Connect for those functions, and then we'd be maintaining both the Vermont Health Connect system for Medicaid and paying for the federal solution. Right now, on an attribution basis, the operating cost of the qualified health plan component of Vermont Health Connect is attributed to be around $8 million using the formulas that CMS specifies for their federal funding. Of that, about $4 million is direct. The rest is attributed overhead. So by going to the federal exchange, you only save about $4 million. The way the feds calculate the way the feds pay for their exchange is a 3.5% premium surcharge. We've got about $200 million of premium base through Vermont Health Connect individuals. 3.5% of that is about $7 million. So it actually winds up costing more in a lot of different ways if we ultimately have to go to the federal solution.
So we got this post from Gabby on this very issue. We should have used the federal exchange right from the beginning. How much money could we have saved over the past few years? Would you say not much? Because if the state of Vermont is going to use the exchange for Medicaid and some of the figures that you just cited, that folks who say, let's go to the federal exchange and save money, you'd say it's not there?
We would still have to have been funded for a project that did substantially the same thing to replace the aging access system at the Agency of Human Services to be able to comply with the new Medicaid eligibility and enrollment requirements.
Today in the program, our guest is the Chief of Healthcare Reform for the Shumlin Administration, Lawrence Miller. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. Your thoughts about Vermont Health Connect? This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. With us today, Lawrence Miller. He's the Chief of Healthcare Reform for the Shumlin Administration. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Ellen in Middlebury. Hi, Ellen. What's on your mind today?
Hi. Yeah, mine is a slightly different tack, but still, you know, healthcare related. You know, we all know that universal access to primary care is relatively inexpensive, and it's the best measure we have to improve overall population health and control costs, because you can discover problems earlier and people can avoid, you know, waiting too long, and they can avoid expensive hospitalization. So I'm wondering, you know, there's still a lot of obstacles, even if people have insurance to primary care because of, you know, co-pays and deductibles. So I'm wondering what the administration might be doing to improve access to primary care.
Sure, that's a very good question. You know, we've spent a lot of time over the past few years looking at various aspects of universal coverage. And obviously, we're not going forward with the whole universal coverage approach. But there are still a great many ways that we can improve the system that we have, make it more of a system, and align financial incentives better to support primary care, preventive care, behavioral support, all of those things that go into helping people avoid acute medical care. And that's important not just for cost containment, but that's important for people's quality of life. We've advocated for and put in our budget proposal increased amounts of cost sharing subsidies so that people would not have the impact that they do of the higher deductible plans when they have are under 400% of the federal poverty level. We're putting more money into Blueprint for Health, more money into Medicaid reimbursement rates for primary care. These are all important first steps. More importantly, we're working with our colleagues at the CMS, the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, on an all-payer model to transform the way Medicaid, Medicare, and private insurance compensate hospitals, doctors, and other providers in the system so that we can shift to an outcomes-based payment system away from fee-for-service in a way that really provides additional financial support for primary care. It's really important that that piece of our delivery system be our focus, because as the caller observed, that's really where you have the greatest impact on improving people's quality of life, their experience of the medical system, or avoidance of experience of the medical system, and the resulting control of costs.
We got an email from Tatiana who really wants a clarification. We were talking about the end of May deadline for the change of circumstance to work. And then, of course, the U.S. Supreme Court is going to rule in June on subsidies at federal or state exchanges. So what Tatiana would like to know is, if we get to the end of May, this thing doesn't work, does it automatically mean we're going to a federal model, or are you going to wait and see what the Supreme Court does?
It does not automatically mean we're going to the federal model. What the legislation language we've presented calls for is for me to come to the Joint Fiscal Committee with a recommendation in November that's based on a number of factors, including how we reach those milestones. Obviously, if the Supreme Court rules against subsidies being available for states that use the federal exchange, that would be a huge problem with this particular contingency plan. We also, I have to be clear, we have to complete this change of circumstance work regardless. The federal exchange as a contingency plan would not provide MAGI Medicaid eligibility and enrollment functions for the state. We still need to provide those services, and we would still be required by CMS to complete that work. They are the funding partner. And what the legislation specifically says is that if we decide that going to the federal exchange is the best choice, that we have to go to the Agency of Health and Human Services and ask to do that. They've invested a considerable amount of money in this project, and it ultimately will be a decision that the state would need to have CMS participation in that final choice.
Here's an email we got from Jane, who wrote us and said, our income changed for 2015. I called Vermont Health Connect in November to report that and to choose a different plan. We would no longer qualify for a subsidy. They told me someone would call me up once the information was processed to officially sign us up for the new plan. It is now March 27th. I haven't heard from them despite repeated calls to them that someone will be calling you soon. That in itself is a problem for Jane and Jane's family because they wonder what their coverage is going to be, and it's an enormous frustration, I'm sure, for them. But then we also get into this whole tax reconciliation question. You know, we found out from H&R Block recently that 52% of the people who received a federal subsidy have had changes in their incomes during the course of the year, and that these folks now face additional tax burdens of between $500 and $1,000. Since we've got thousands of Vermonters who haven't been able to do their change of circumstance, Jane being one of them, don't these folks face a sort of a reckoning when they go to do their income tax returns? They're going to find out that their tax burden is huge?
Well, it's been very interesting to deal with this particular question. Fact is that, yes, it's an advanced premium tax credit that's reconciled with your final return. The feds put some limits on what they would try and recapture for people under 400% of federal poverty level. And then those go away if you transition to a higher income tax bracket. So that it really is a lot of complexities and is very specific to the individual's circumstances. The flip side of 52% is that 48% of people had a greater than expected premium subsidy that was credited to them when they filed their return. So,
or could have been what they expected.
Or could have been what they expected. But, you know, that amount is it's very rare that you find that it's exactly what you expected. So that's been a huge problem. The other problem was a number of incorrect 1095 forms that were sent out by various states and the federal government. The federal government themselves sent out 800,000 incorrect Form 1095. So last Friday, the Treasury Department actually issued additional guidance that if people got an incorrect 1095 and they had filed their taxes, that they could go ahead and leave that return on file if it was in their favor. They don't have to file an amended return if they get an updated 1095, and they would be better off if they did file an amended return, then they can do that. And that that guidance is on the IRS website.
You know, this whole time we've been talking about individuals and Vermont Health Connect, not businesses. Businesses are allowed to go around the exchange and buy their policies directly from the insurance companies because it doesn't work for them to be on the exchange. Is it ever going to work for them to be on the exchange?
CMS is indicating they still expect all of the states to build a what's called SHOP, the Small Business Online Marketplace. But for now, they're agreeing with our priority on stabilizing the individual market and are going to continue to allow us to offer only direct enrollment. At the time that we have an electronic exchange available as well, we would anticipate businesses would still be allowed to direct enroll with the carriers. That's what's in state law now. Last year, we asked the legislature to amend it so that it allowed for direct enrollment. Direct enrollment for individuals is much more complicated for the carriers, and for people with a subsidy, really virtually impossible for them to do direct enrollment with the carriers.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Rick in Rockingham. Hi, Rick. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. Good afternoon. And I'm wondering, if your guest can shed some light on the selection of CGI as the vendor. That company had a really dismal reputation when Vermont hired them. They didn't do a very good job with the federal version. And then when Vermont finally fired them, I understand they got to walk away with $56 million of the $70 million contract, leaving behind a deeply flawed and dysfunctional system. And so I'd love to hear your guest perspective on that.
Sure. The state had originally had negotiations with another vendor, and those went on for quite a while before they were finally declared failed. And at that point, needed to find a vendor that was engaged in developing a solution for one of the other states, and surveyed the marketplace with the assistance of CMS, who was using CGI for some work at that time, and selected the version of the exchange that was being implemented in Hawaii because it met many of the needs, including the Magi Medicaid eligibility needs that we had here in Vermont. It was a system that was built on the Oracle platform that was consistent with the long-term objectives of the Agency of Health and Human Services that had decided on how to go forward with its enterprise replacement back in the Douglas administration. So it was the best choice at that time. That part of the company, had a pretty reasonable reputation at that time. That was before the feds had problems with the exchange. And the state had used CGI on other projects in the past successfully. They are a very large company with a lot of diverse portfolios. But this particular piece of business, the exchange, broke a lot of folks who tried to do these projects, and CGI was, this division of CGI was among those. As to exiting the contract, we did that with the guidance of outside counsel. We did it with the advice of CMS and their technical assistance folks, since they were the 100% federal funded, their participation was absolutely critical. And we did it in with the support of conversations that I had with colleagues around the country who were doing similar changes.
We got this email from Bill in Middlebury who wants to know, how confident are you, Lawrence, that the system will work by the end of May, and how much more will that cost?
I'm feeling very confident in the work that's being done right now. I think, as you know, we avoided putting out any milestones or dates associated with development for a long time because of the uncertainty associated with each step. I feel like we've got a very good project plan in place. We've got excellent participation from our vendors. We've got excellent participation from Blue Cross Blue Shield, MVP, Delta Dental. Everyone's pulling together in the same direction on an agreed, detailed work plan to get there. So I'm feeling better about this project than I have since I first became associated with it.
Now, there have been lots of deadlines set out there, and the governor has talked about them, and almost every deadline has been missed. So I know there's some people listening who are thinking, why are you confident about this when you've missed every other deadline?
Well, because every deadline that we've had since October 1 that we brought Optum on board, we've been able to meet. And this has been very consistent with them. And, you know, I was clear in committee as well. This is our milestone target, but we are not going to compromise on quality to meet that date if the testing indicates that we're not ready.
And is this a case where it's, if you don't make the end of May deadline and you see what happens in June with the U.S. Supreme Court, that by missing the end of May deadline, that's enough to trigger the whole taking a look at the federal model?
You know, there's a tremendous amount of work that needs to be done in order to prepare a comprehensive recommendation for November with a full understanding of the cost implications and service implications for people. So much of that work will be done regardless of whether or not we have a problem with the May deadline, because it's also critical that we have an automated renewals function later in the year. And we're just not going to leave anything to chance. We're continuing to develop contingencies in each case. We think the most likely, best financial solution, if we do need to move away from Vermont Health Connect for qualified health plans, would be the federally supported state-based marketplace model. That doesn't mean that we're making a decision now that that's the only model. We need a certain amount of specificity in legislation for the Joint Fiscal Committee to act with the delegation of the full legislature in November. So that's why it's so specific. If we see in November that there's a better solution that's not on people's radar right now, then we'd wait for the session to begin to be able to get the approval of the full legislature.
Today on the program, our guest is Lawrence Miller, Chief of Healthcare Reform for the Shumlin Administration. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. With me today is Lawrence Miller, the Chief of Healthcare Reform in the Shumlin Administration. We've been talking about Vermont Health Connect. We're also going to talk about this Medicaid cost shift plan. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Jeff in North Bennington. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I tuned in late, so I'm not sure if you've covered this, but I have a question about if someone's income changes from what the premiums were based on the previous year, and you find out when you get your taxes done, your income's gone up or down, what would be the best way to contact Vermont Health Connect to let them know, and is it possible to have these changes taken into account at this point?
It is possible to have those changes taken into account. That's done using the interim change process, so it takes a while. Nothing is quick right now except access to care and financially urgent cases, but you just go ahead and call Vermont Health Connect, averaging about a 20-second wait time last week. Let them know what those income changes are. Average time on a call is about 8 minutes, so block out a little bit of time to get served, and they'd be able to put that change in process for you.
Back in January, in his inaugural address, the governor proposed the imposition of a 0.7% payroll tax to help pay for a package of healthcare initiatives. You talked about some of those earlier in the program. A good chunk of the money was used to boost Medicaid reimbursement rates for healthcare providers as a way to reduce the so-called Medicaid cost shift. Well, now it looks like that payroll tax is in real trouble at the State House, and perhaps a sugar-sweetened beverage tax in some kind of scaled-back form, along with maybe a sales tax on candy, is being looked at. But the bottom line really is that the legislature doesn't seem like it's going to raise as much money as the administration was hoping. So as you look at the priorities, there's the cost shift that you'd like to address, increasing state subsidies, blueprint for health, other Medicaid rate increases. Where's the priority for you if you only end up with half as much money?
Well, I think the clear priority is on the various elements of primary care, cost-sharing reductions, blueprint for health, quality improvements that have a meaningful long-term impact. Those are really transformational. But the cost shift is also a really pressing issue, and this isn't a I talk to people, Democrats, progressives, Republicans, independents. Most people understand that the cost shift is a serious issue right now. The chronic underfunding of Medicaid is a big part of that. It's taken years to develop to this scale. But when you combine Medicaid, Medicare, free care, charity care, bad debt, you're talking about $400 million and $1.6 billion worth of premium base in the state. So you're talking about 20% plus of premiums paid by Vermonters and medical costs paid by Vermonters with commercial insurance being going to other people's costs. And that's clearly unsustainable. So, we still hope that the legislature will have something, the courage to do something meaningful about that very real problem this year.
You know, we had a call earlier in the program from Ellen in Middlebury about primary care, and I'm wondering, if the legislature doesn't address this cost shift problem this year, you've got 23,000 new people coming on to the Medicaid program, and if the reimbursement rates are low, you're going to have a lot of health care providers, primarily the primary care docs, who are going to say, I can't take any more Medicaid patients. So if you don't address the cost shift, have you really created a situation where primary care is in trouble?
You know, that's a very real concern, and that's why we've come forward with such a significant proposal in a year where there are identified, obviously a lot of budget challenges at the same time. I mean, this is not to ignore the fact that we've got a very serious core budget situation that we need to address. But this is another very important piece of our economy, and it's an important piece of people's quality of life, be able to access the doctors that they need. It affects particularly hard pediatricians and primary care providers. That's exactly why we are pushing for such a significant, bold step at a time where we recognize that it's very difficult to raise revenue, but it's really got to be done.
So the governor so far has been pretty unenthusiastic about this sugar sweetened beverage tax. Do you think in the end, if it's scaled back, it becomes an acceptable form of revenue in order to accomplish these goals?
Yeah, the governor's been pretty consistent that he doesn't think the sugar sweetened beverage tax is the right way to go. We propose the payroll tax for a couple of reasons. It's a relatively stable base. The fact that it's resulting in the increased Medicaid rates will result in reduced premium costs and medical costs means that the people who pay the tax will see a decrease in their cost of providing benefits to their employees if they provide health insurance. So we continue to think that that's a more effective way to go at a low rate. That being said, you know, there's a few weeks yet to go in the session, and we'll continue to work with the legislature to find the best revenue package across the board that the governor and the legislature can agree on.
I mean, you can tell from the House Ways and Means Committee the payroll tax is not a very popular tax in there. So that's why I'm wondering if something like the sugar-sweetened beverage tax becomes acceptable.
It's all going to depend on the final context of what the total revenue package looks like across the various bills this year. But, you know, if they pare down the amount of spending to the point where it's not a meaningful step for the healthcare providers, where it's not a meaningful step for the cost shift, and where it's a revenue source that perhaps unstable or unpredictable, it's going to be awfully hard for us to support something that doesn't meet those objectives.
You know, also as part of the governor's health care package, the employer assessment, those for businesses that don't offer insurance to their employees, it's about $500 per employee per year. The governor suggested eliminating that assessment.
Well, we were asked some questions. That was not in our original proposal. And then we were asked a series of questions about that particular component. So we did provide the House Health Care Committee information about what it would cost to buy out the employer assessment. And in the context of the payroll tax, and a number of people felt that on balance, if people were paying both a payroll tax and an employer assessment, that perhaps that was double taxation, and eventually the House Health Care Committee did include that in the package that they sent to Ways and Means. Kind of hard to tell what its status might be at the end of the session, though.
Because for many businesses, paying the payroll tax would be far preferable to paying the assessment. And so some people are wondering, by eliminating the assessment, are you in fact rewarding companies for not offering insurance?
You know, I think the arguments that I've heard is that companies that don't offer insurance are often not in a financial position to be able to do so, that the complexities of reporting this tax and collecting this tax increase its cost, administrative cost, as a share of what's brought in. But it is it creates some winners and some losers. The idea that we're using that income stream to leverage Medicaid funding now is helping to relieve what would be a worst cost shift for employers that do provide insurance.
We're almost out of time, but the budget is on the House floor today. In that budget, some cuts to state subsidies for Vermont Health Connect. The administration is proposing increasing the state subsidies. Seems like folks are going in different directions.
You know, they made the decision that they wanted to address the cost-sharing reduction issue in the context of the health care bill rather than in the core budget. So the amount that was taken out of the budget was passed over to the health care committee for consideration when they make their recommendation to appropriations on the health care bill.
So in the end, do you think the state subsidies are increased for folks?
I do. It's one of the most important and effective steps we can take to help improve the value of insurance for people at those lower income levels who are buying on the exchange, make that really much more worth having.
That's our program for today. In the next week or two, the House will be voting on that health care plan. We'll certainly be covering it. Many thanks to our guest today, health care reform chief Lawrence Miller. Thanks for being on the program.
Thank you, Bob.
That's it for today. On Monday, join us for a look at Vermont's counterculture of the 1970s. It was a time of massive social change in Vermont that continues to influence the state today. We'll talk with the Vermont Historical Society about a project they're embarking on to capture Vermonters' memories of that time. Send your stories of social activism and going back to the land to VermontEdition@vpr.net and listen Monday at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels and Rick Sangari, with production assistance from Devin Karambelis. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.